This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. Reading from Arnold Grefson's book, A Land of Howling Wolves, I'll continue his story of finding work as a young man at a logging camp in Wisconsin. We arrived at camp number 12 well before supper time, but didn't see anyone around. The bunkhouses were empty of men, as were other buildings, so we decided to try the cook shack. Lumber camp cooks are notoriously cranky individuals and don't like outsiders in their kitchens, except at mealtime, and we were hesitant about confronting an unfriendly cook. After rapping timidly on the cook shack door, a voice called out, "Come on in, boys, and have a cup of coffee and a bit to eat." In entering, we saw an elderly man wearing an apron, busily attending to his kitchen chores. "I saw you boys through the window," said the cook, "and I figured you'd be coming here next. Have a cup of coffee and help yourself to the donuts and cookies on that table over there. Supper will be ready in about an hour. The boss and the men will be coming in from the woods at any time now. I take it you boys are going to work here." We told the cook we were. "Well, Walt, the boss, is a nice young fellow, and he will find you a place to sleep as soon as he gets back from making his checking rounds." Deciding to take another look around the camp before supper time, we again went to inspect the two bunkhouses. Above the doorway of one, someone had printed in large black letters, "Cootie Heaven," and above the doorway of the other bunkhouse was printed, "Hotel de Crumbs." We were thus occupied in our inspection when a young, well-built man approached us. "Are you boys looking for me?" he asked. "If you are Walt, the boss man, we are," was our reply, at the same time handing him the envelope the superintendent had given us. He opened it and read the contents. Smiling, he said, "I have never made a tie in my life myself, but I know how they are made. In the morning, we will get you the proper tools and find you a patch of timber to work in. Then it will be up to you boys to practice the art of tie-making until you master it and can hew out a saleable tie. Now we will find you a place to sleep. There are unoccupied bunks in both bunkhouses with bedding. However, there is one thing I will tell you right now. You may discover that you will become lousy after occupying whatever bunk you may choose. It is awfully hard to stay free of the pesky vermin in a place like this. The reason being that men come and go here and many of them are lousy. Our steady employees keep them under control by boiling their underwear and bedding every Sunday in the several large kettles at the back of each bunkhouse. We chose bunks in the Hotel de Crumbs and set about making up our beds with the several blankets rolled up in each bunk. After supper that night, we became acquainted with our roommates in the Hotel de Crumbs and thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and stories related by these robust, friendly men. After breakfast the next morning, Walt came into the bunkhouse and said, "You boys come with me and pick out your tools. You will need two double bit axes, two broad axes, and a crosscut saw. I think that you boys had better work together at the start, and I'll put you to work in a stand of hemlock timber. Hemlock is a lot easier to hew than birch or other hardwood timber." On our way to the woods, Walt led the way by a route which led us by several experienced tie makers already at work, where we stopped to observe and listen to Walt's explanation of the way to make ties. Arriving at our stand of hemlock, we were told that a standard tie was hewed from timber having a minimum diameter of 9 inches, as the face of the hewed tie had to be at least 6 inches, and the finished tie not less than 6 inches thick. At Walt's suggestion, we started in cutting down a large hemlock, which we had first notched or undercut with a double-bit axe. Then, using a large two-man crosscut saw, we started sawing on the opposite side of the tree from the undercut. Soon our tree was falling and hit the ground with a crash, falling free of the stump. The next step was to chop off all the branches as close to the trunk as possible, starting at a point where the fallen tree had at least a 9-inch diameter, the branches from this 9-inch point to the top of the tree being left on to prevent the tree from rolling and to help hold it stable while hewing the sides of the tree. Walking along the trunk of the tree and using our double bit axes, we scored the tree. That is, about every 8 or 9 inches, we would chop our axes into one side of the trunk first, then repeat the procedure on the other side, being as careful as possible to make our scoring chops as close to the same depth as possible. Then, armed with each a broad axe and warned by Walt to take it easy at first and to watch our feet, we again mounted the tree trunk and started at opposite ends, slowly and with caution began to hew the sides of the scored tree. The idea being for the hewer to let his broad axe strike the score cuts at the same depth as he walked slowly backwards along the trunk, broad axe rising and falling as the hewer made his way to the end. The next step was to measure the hewed tree into 8-foot lengths. Then again, using the crosscut saw, we cut the marked tree into the required 8-foot lengths. Walt was still with us and said, "You did well. You have 4 standard ties here and saleable at that, which is pretty good on the first try. You can trim up the top of the tree now and cut it into 8-foot pulpwood lengths and down to a 3.5-inch diameter. You will get 4 cents a stick for all the pulpwood you get out of the tops and smaller trees not large enough for ties. I will leave you now. Remember to be careful and not to get into too much of a rush until you have a few days practice and get the feel of it. See you at supper time, as I'll not be at the cook shack at noon." I'll have to read more of this story later. I can't believe how hard these people had to work for their pay. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.